This is Overdrive on TSN 1050, the voice of Toronto sports.
Scott MacArthur, Steve Simmons with you on Overdrive, TSN 1050, the TSN Go app, the general manager of the Toronto Argonauts. Jim Popp will join us in 40 minutes' time. The Blue Jays. Well, you want to jump in on Pop?
So if you're Jim Pop and Calgary beat Hamilton 60-1 last week, how much are you looking forward to tomorrow? Like, are you sitting there thinking,
well, you're a better team than Hamilton.
Okay, yeah, you are a better team than Hamilton. But that's something to look at when you're sitting there. And that's a great football team. And that's Bo Levi Mitchell with, you know, one of the great one-loss records in the history of sport. As a quarterback in the CFL, he isn't remarkable. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it's a remarkable thing. And you've got to deal with this tomorrow at home. Like, we'll be able to talk to him later about it. But
you've done here, Steve? 60-1,
yes.
Right? Well, we've got the pseudo-Canadian now. Steve Phillips is essentially a Canadian, but without the passport. He's going to give us hell now for the Rouge, right? Because any time an American comes on, talks Canadian football, how do you end a game with one point to your name?
They obsess about the Rouge. They love to talk about the Rouge. And he's got a son who plays football. So
here we go.
Perfect.
Well, Steve Phillips, TSN Blue Jays insider with us now, brought to you by Oakland Ford Lincoln. Give it to us, Steve. Talk to us about the Rouge if you want.
No, I love the Rouge. I any way you can score in a game, and the more ways you can score, I'm in on it. So I grew up in Detroit. I'm actually in Detroit right now, visiting my parents, and right across the river from Windsor, and have watched Canadian Football League games. And my used to get the Hockey Night in Canada, I'm all in on the Rouge, man. So I'm not going to criticize the Rouge. I kind of like it. Wish they'd add it to the NFL, certainly to college football.
The thing that shocks all football fans, especially Americans, the first time they ever see it, is that end of game punt into the end zone, punt out of the end zone to avoid the Rouge. And the first time anybody sees that, and they see a punter in the end zone recovering, getting the punt and then kicking it back, at that moment you see rugby and where the roots of rugby came from football.
Yeah, and I got to tell you what, I kind of like the game better. I like all the motion and the movement and everybody moved toward the line of scrimmage. And I think it's a more wide-open, fun game to watch. And how about the catch the guy made last week? The one-handed, the
Daron Carter
of a catch? Yeah, wow. What a catch that was. That was absolutely amazing. So, I actually enjoyed watching the highlights when I was in town and watching that catch. Absolutely phenomenal.
And Daron Carter, Steve, is Chris Carter's son, just for a little context for you.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Huh?
So the apple don't fall too far from the tree. The Jays pick up the series win over the White Sox. I suppose that isn't particularly relevant now, just given the way the season's gone. I want to take you down this track today, Steve. You're the general manager of a team that has traded a couple of major league assets at the deadline. The non-waiver trade deadline has passed. There are 2 months still left on the schedule, but you're not expecting to contend this year, quite obviously. Where does your focus turn to now?
Yeah, there's still plenty of work to do. I think right now it is who's part of the problem, who's part of the solution. That as you've created holes on your pitching staff, in the bullpen, in the rotation, it's opportunity time for some guys to step up and show that they can be part of the solution for 2018. And in the meantime, I think that what you'll see is some research and development going on where they're going to go out and they're going to scout. For instance, the kid that pitched against the Blue Jays on Sunday, the Bridwell kid that's pitching for the Angels. Like, right now, I would be saying to my staff, I want every one of you to find that guy for me. You know, the Angels signed him. They bought him from the Baltimore Orioles in April for what I understand is $50,000. And he now is 5-1 himself. And they've won 8 of the 9 games that he pitched. And he was a guy that was kind of cast aside. And there are every organization out there has that guy that is not getting the opportunity, not getting the development, not getting that look that he needs there are diamonds in the rough to be found. And so I would be having my scouting people, my staff out there looking for who those opportunities are, because one of the things that I've noticed over the last couple of weeks is I see a lot of these small deals happening of names that people don't really know, where, okay, the Dodgers traded for this guy. They bought this guy. They got, and what they're doing is they're trying to find that, you know, that Bridwell type guy that has failed somewhere else that you're looking to take advantage of. So that's what they're going to do. And they're going to evaluate the staff that they have and continue to make sure development is there and start looking ahead to the offseason and targeting potential free agents and trade candidates.
The remarkable thing about the Bridwell thing to me is it's Baltimore that gave him up, a team that
Listen, on the day that he threw that gem against the Jays, they were completing a deal to get Jeremy Hellickson, who got the qualifying offer for $17.2 million last year. And I know they ate the money in the contract, but how if that's not the ironic twist in all of it, that this guy that they could have pitching for a rookie minimum salary, they gave away for $50,000, and then they bring in Jeremy Hellickson, a veteran guy, into the rotation when they could have had a kid under control for the next 6 years. It's crazy.
Well, before Mark Shapiro came into the equation, the guy who was supposed to be running the Blue Jays is the guy that's running the Orioles. So if Rogers had gotten their way in what they were trying to do originally, Dan Duquette would be running the Blue Jays today.
That's right. And now, in Dan Duquette's defense, just about every organization will have a guy that they whiff on, that they miss on, that they didn't quite, you know, recognize he was as good as he is, and he's gotten an opportunity somewhere else, and he figured it out. Maybe some, and, you know, the story with this kid, Bridwell, is the backup catcher for the Angels, Gratterall, saw him throw and said, boy, you keep landing on your heel with your front foot. Why don't you put on sneakers and throw your bullpen sessions with sneakers on so that you can get out on your toe and land and get extension out in front of your pitches, and it's made all the difference in the world because one catcher saw him and thought, you know what, I see something. Maybe you need to fix that. But for Dan Duquette, the Baltimore Orioles general manager's job is by far the toughest job, one of the toughest jobs in baseball, in that Peter Angelos, the owner, puts so many stipulations and restrictions on what he can do. He was out shopping Zach Britton around, and this is not the first time, but had a number of deals that he could have made, and at the last minute the owner says, nope, you know what, I don't want you to trade him, and you end up holding. That they were negotiating with players in the draft this year, and offering money, getting ready to sign. They didn't get permission or approval. And at 3:02 p.m. on the day that they had to get the deal done, they got permission. The problem was the deadline was at 3 o'clock. So the owner can then say, I gave them permission to spend the money. And the team says, yeah, but we couldn't spend it because we went past the deadline. And that's the sort of thing that happens in Baltimore all the time. And so I have some level of compassion for Dan Duquette because I think the job he has is different than the one everybody else does.
Steve, you talked about finding somebody in the minors. I'm really interested to look at the guys who are on the current roster right now, many of whom are underperforming, and wondering, over the last 2 months of this season, is there anything some of these players who have underperformed can prove to you that make them willing to go with a year from now or longer than that?
Well, yeah, I think, you know, one of the guys for me that I think they need to figure out, I know that they like Joe Biagini, and they thought that maybe he could be a starter, and they stretched him out in the spring, and, you know, he started in the bullpen, but then moved into the rotation, and it didn't go all that well in the rotation, and now they've moved him back to the bullpen. It's not going all that well right now in the bullpen over the last couple of times for him. They've got to figure out, you know, how high leverage a pitcher can he be, and in what role does he best fit? Because I think that's important. Because if he's just a 5-something ERA fifth starter, and he's more of a middle reliever than a setup guy, then, you know, his values, and they're going to need to replace that role. Because I think they had in their mind that he would be a guy like that. They need to figure out if Tapera can handle high leverage situations. Tepish, whether he can maybe start at the major league level and start to get some answers on some of those guys. I think that Kevin Pillar, for me, needs to be a better player because he's that one guy that makes you think, geez, we need Pillar in center field because he's so great defensively. But what he is as an offensive player in some ways limits the length and depth of your offense because he's more of a slasher without a lot of power, without a lot of speed. And that little bit more power that he's having this year, I think, gets him into trouble a little bit, where I think he swings big. They're trying to hit it out, and it's and I'd rather have better at-bats with more line drives than more swings for home runs. So I think there's got to be some answers there as well for him. It's going to be a pretty important one.
Well, Steve Phillips is our guest, a Blue Jays insider for TSN, TSN 1050. This is Overdrive on TSN 1050 and streaming on the TSN Go app. Let's delve into Pilar a little bit here, Steve, because this guy has been, you call him a slasher, absolutely free swinger, does not walk a lot. His first 6 weeks of this season, and it kind of got lost because the team started so poorly, but I think you could make a very logical argument that he was the Blue Jays' best hitter from the start of the season until about mid-May. And that, I think if you put together that six-week window, probably his best six-week window as a major leaguer to date. He hasn't found it since. The challenge, of course, is to bottle that up and to produce that consistently. Is there anything, as an executive, putting on your GM's hat, you would look at and say, well, he's just got to find the consistency there. He's shown us it's there. Or was that the outlier when you look at his three and a half year big league career so far?
Yeah, I think that my sense is that by now you've got a pretty good idea of what he is. He could be a real streaky guy that when he's locked in, he can give you a nice little run with a little bit of pop. His speed can be a factor on the bases. He could steal a base for you. He can go first to third on a double. He could stretch a single into a double and do some exciting things. But with that, because he's not disciplined really at the plate, that if he gets a run of pitches that they feed him, he can do something with it. But when they make an adjustment and they can consistently make that adjustment, it takes him a lot of time to be able to adjust back. And I think that after 3.5 years, that's kind of what he is. I don't think he's ever going to be a leadoff hitter, legitimately number two hitter. I think he's always going to be a 7, 8, or 9 hitter. The issue is, how good's the defense? Because the defense is, he can make some great plays. It doesn't feel quite as good this year as it was last year, and I think the numbers back that up a bit. It all looks at how does that fit into the rest of your roster? Because you've got to look at what is your team offense, and if you're going to sacrifice at any one position, then you need to make up for it somewhere else. And so if they're not getting great production out of right field, and with Bautista, they're having to put him in a leadoff spot in the lineup, then they've got to make up for that lost production spot, that slugger, somewhere else. And Pilar's not the guy that you make it up with. If Tulo is going to be a little less offensively, you're going to have to make up for it somewhere else. And it can't be that you're getting less at catcher, less at shortstop, less in center field, and then still be able to put together a platoon in left, which you automatically, you get less on a given day, but maybe more over the course of the season if you get it right. And Bautista giving you less. So their everyday lineup is something they're really going to have to look at, not as an individual player-by-player evaluation, but as a unit, how do those at-bats better connect? Because they don't, watching them over the weekend, the at-bats don't connect to each other. They have a lot of individual at-bats that nothing seems to hook together. Now, if Donaldson heats up, maybe he'll be that thing that connects the front of the lineup to the back, and it looks like he's getting better, but they need a lot more than just him.
Steve Phillips is TSN, TSN 1050's Blue Jays insider. This is Overdrive on TSN 1050 and the TSN Go app. Now, last night's incident between Marcus Stroman and Tim Anderson, this was Anderson getting frustrated with the quick pitches, so he's calling time. The umpire is granting time at times while Stroman has begun his windup. Anderson beaks a little bit at Stroman. Stroman goes back at him. The bench is empty. That's the nuts and bolts of last night, Steve. But the broader question I have is there too much of this stuff, whether it's with umpires or opposing players, going on with Marcus Stroman?
Well, he's a provocative, polarizing guy. And there are a lot of players that need that chip on their shoulder in order to maximize their ability. And if it's not naturally occurring, then they somewhat stimulate it themselves, right? They'll force something to happen. Bonds was that way. Barry Bonds played with a chip on his shoulder. And to a degree, Jose Bautista plays with a chip on his shoulder. And at times, Bautista is the provocateur to try to initiate the angst and energy to, because he needs it to motivate himself. And if it's not with another team, you know, we've seen it, the run-ins with the teams, and it might be that he's angry about something somebody said in the media, and that's the motivator that kind of gets him going. And I think Marcus has some part of that need to be there, and so he keeps going and he feeds off of it. And what you have to understand is that if you take it away, he may not be the same player, so I wouldn't dare want to take it away. But you also have to understand that every 2 weeks, every month, three or four times a season, there's going to be a thing that happens with somebody, and it's because it went a little too far, or that same guy who needs that same edge on the other team reacts to it. And we may have seen that a little bit yesterday with Anderson's reaction, because I think he needs some of that sort of venom to juice himself up a little bit as well. So I don't worry too much about it with Marcus. I think it's you know, it's going to happen. But as long as he's performing well, I'll deal with a little bit of extra fire, because sometimes that's a much better thing than having to try to light a fire under somebody else.
Do you worry that in more of a long-term sense, because he's still young in his career. He's only been a starter for a couple of years in the big leagues, and he's, you know, reputation is what it is. Do you worry about a guy like that almost becoming a caricature of himself in later years if it continues that way?
Yes. I think it's an excellent point and observation, and it's a reality, and we've seen it with others. But I don't. It's just God doesn't make the perfect player, right? They're not all cut from the same throat and mold and everything else. And so every guy's different. And those guys who feed on energy and emotion, sometimes that energy and emotion gets too far. Sometimes they can't create it. Sometimes they have to go somewhere else and start all over again. And so I think you ride it for as long as you can. You know, to me, too much emotion driving the game, your own personal game, at some point causes you to burn out a little bit, because you have to keep getting ramped up and ramped up and ramped up, and it's hard to do that. Those guys who sustain long-term success at the major league level are those guys that can maintain the even keel, and they have that sort of quiet energy. You know, like you look at Mike Trout, like he just plays, right? And he's got that burning inner fire, but he doesn't have to snarl and bark to do it. Bryce Harper does. Bryce Harper needs that chip on his shoulder. Bryce Harper needs that sort of energy, and that, to me, that's tiring, right? It wears you down. There's a reason why there aren't a million players that have played the game that were like Pete Rose, who had that sort of, you know, constant energizer bunny thing going, because it's too hard to maintain that level, and you wear yourself out. Stroman's got some of that, and it does worry me that sort of always having to ramp it up at some point, it's like, man, I'm exhausted from having to keep doing this. But yet, he's young, and his best years will be with the Blue Jays, and so you might as well enjoy it.
With Steve Phillips, a former New York Mets GM, TSN Blue Jays insider. This is Overdrive on TSN 1050. I suppose this circles back to what you said out of the gate, Steve, in terms of assessing that who's part of the future, who's part of the problem as to where this season went wrong. But as the final 2 months here play out, you're looking for work ethic and expecting guys to compete on a day-in and day-out basis, yet you understand that it's human nature. If you're 15 games under 500 in mid-September, that's a tough two-and-a-half-week slog to the end. Do expectations of certain guys change? Do you accept that they might dial the pregame work back a bit, for example? Certain guys, not, you know, kids trying to prove themselves, but just generally speaking.
Well, you know, it's everyone has to form their own evaluation, right? Where we stand on an issue comes from where we sit. So my initial inclination is I want to grind it out to the bitter end. I want that guy, every guy, to just do the right thing. And the right thing is that have pride in yourself, have pride in the game, and understand that we find out a lot more about people and players when things are going poorly than when things are going well. I mean, that's in everyday life, too. I say to my kids all the time, you know, when things aren't going well, when you're struggling, that's when we're finding out about who you are. It's easy to be a good interview. It's easy to be a good teammate. It's easy to be a good quote, a good citizen. When you're hitting 350, you're tearing it up, team's winning, you know, everybody's kind of strutting along. That's not the hard part. The hard part is, and you show us truly who you are when things are going poorly. So that's the message, that no matter what, you're telling us something about yourself down the stretch. And sure, you know, a veteran guy who might need to protect himself a little bit from the wear and tear, I have some compassion and understanding about him making a choice. But even for those guys, man, I want you to be the leader of my team. I want you to be the somebody who sets the tone that we're teaching young players what the expectations are at the major league level. I want my guys I'm paying the money to, who I'm counting on to be leaders, to continue to lead even in the worst of times. So if there's any lowering of a standard for me, it's minimal, and it better be with good reason and understanding. Otherwise, I don't like what I'm seeing if you're not giving me 100%.
Great stuff, Steve. We'll do it again next week. Look forward to it.
Okay, you bet. Thanks.
Steve Phillips, TSN, TSN 1050, Blue Jays insider, and our conversation brought to you by Oakland Ford Lincoln. We're just playing out the string for 8 weeks, Steve. C'est la vie.
I don't think it's playing out the string. I think this is a time for evaluation. This is a time for everybody to show, like, you're Jose Bautista, for example. I'm not sure he can do anything over the final 2 months.
Where were you when it counted?
Yeah, to show that that he's got anything left or enough left so you can invest in him further. But this is one of the five greatest Blue Jays, in my opinion, ever. And so it's kind of a conflicting spot to be in. You got to watch the final 2 months, and you got to watch what is left of him, and then you got to watch him sort of sadly go away. And it's not the way anyone would have wanted that story to end.
Right. We live through it now, but when his name is going up on the level of excellence 5-7 years from now, we won't remember 2017.
No, you'll be remembering 54 home runs and 43 home runs.
And the bat flip.
Yeah.
And all
the moments.
All the great moments. Man, could they drag out the Colin Kaepernick Baltimore Ravens situation any more than they already have? Yes, they can. We'll get into the latest details and give you our thoughts on that. Scott MacArthur, Steve Simmons, Overdrive, TSN 1050, and the TSN Go app. Argos General Manager Jim Popp, our guest in about 10 minutes' time at 6:40. This is Overdrive, TSN 1050, the TSN Go app. Scott MacArthur and Steve Simmons. I can just tell by looking at you, Steve. There's one thing lacking in your day today. Baltimore Ravens, Colin Kaepernick talk. You have been on me every commercial break. When can we talk about this? Please. No?
There are some stories in the world that should just go away. They should find their own place and just sort of disappear over time. I kind of liked what Colin Kaepernick did when he did it at the time in America, privately by himself, not bothering anyone else. I guess, well, bothering lots of people, but not bringing his teammates into it or anything else. And then in the way this thing has imploded and exploded into many more things than just one person's personal protest, I don't feel sorry for Colin Kaepernick, but I suspect that what he intended this to be and what it's turned out to be were very, very different.
Although I think he had to be. He's a smart guy. He's not a dumb guy. He had like a close to a 4 GPA going through college. He had to know that this was a possibility. He had to.
I wonder at the time,
I don't know if you can ever predict it, but he had to know.
Do you know when you decide to do what he did, which some people were deeply offended by? And Americans really have a much greater sense of institution and country and pride than we Canadians do. So it's hard sometimes for us to relate to all that's gone on in the Colin Kaepernick story, because I don't think it would resonate the same way in Canada that it has in the United States. But that said, I don't think he thought, as I'm taking a knee here for the very first time, that this will basically be possibly ending my career. And that's what we're seeing now, is whether a team that should sign him, because it makes sense to sign him, because he's still top 40 quarterbacks in the world. He may not be a starter anymore, but show me 8 backups that are better than him. Maybe you can get to 8. I don't know if you can. And that's where he fits in now. So all these teams are signing inferior quarterbacks to him because no one wants to touch the guy.
Do you think he's employed if he's a star? doing all of this? And I guess the flip side of that question, Steve, is can you focus on all the things it takes to be a star while doing all of the work that Colin is doing and creating the controversy through the... I don't think anybody has an issue, maybe some of Middle America would, but I don't think anybody has an issue with the Know Your Rights movement that he has created. He's all over Twitter and Instagram with his charity and the work that he's doing. But specific to the kneeling for the anthem, I mean, could you focus enough on football to be a star with everything else going on?
If it interrupts your film work, if it interrupts your training, if it interrupts your throwing the ball in practice or working with receivers or working with coaches, then you'd say yes. If it doesn't, and you do all of this away from your preparation to play, and that, let's be honest, to play quarterback in the National Football League, it's almost a full-time job just to learn how to prepare to do that. That's how difficult it is. So there's those factors involved, along with, you know, all the physical things. If he can do that and maintain his political stance, I have no problem with it. I may not agree with what he's doing. What teams are afraid, they're not afraid of whether he can, you know, quarterback and do what he wants to do. They're afraid that their fan base will turn on them. And that's what the fear is here from teams.
Right, but what does that tell you? I mean, the man is kneeling for the anthem, and I get
it. Well, it tells you that there are people who are deeply offended by the fact that his kneeling down is an assault in their minds. I'm not saying my mind. In their minds against the military. Right. In their minds against the country they love. Ever watch an American stand for the national anthem?
Yeah, the difference, always turn and face the flag, hand over the heart.
Yeah, hand on the heart, completely solemn, eyes on the flag. Ever watch a Canadian stand for the anthem?
It's like hands in pockets.
Where's my beer? Around. Do I take my baseball cap off? There's no hand on a heart.
Right.
Hands in pockets.
I'll tell you this one thing, Steve. You are keenly aware. I think you certainly would have been through it traveling through the United States. Seventh inning stretch, Yankee Stadium, Sunday afternoon. I'm a Canadian kid, and everybody on the beat covering the Blue Jays are Canadian kids. You become, in a nanosecond, snap of a finger, uber aware that you don't even blink during God Bless America.
You can't go to your popcorn.
Yeah.
And I've done it. And you get the look.
And you get the look.
You get the look from one of the people in another row. It's like, put that popcorn away.
Have you ever covered a game at Tropicana Field? I'm sure you have.
That is the worst stadium in the history of mankind.
Well, that's not where I was going with this. Okay. Actually, to work in, it's not bad.
Oh, it's not bad to work in. To watch. It's horrible.
From a fan experience, I'll tell you this right now. You got 30 stadia to choose from. The Oakland Coliseum. In fact, if you're going to go to a game at the Oakland Coliseum, go to a game at the Oakland Coliseum. But really, it's just about wrapping that into a trip to San Francisco and taking the BART across. But at Tropicana Field, the media meal room is across the hall from the press box and through some elevators, past some elevators where you would ascend or descend. They stand for the anthem in the media meal room, even though you're not anywhere overlooking the field. And if you don't stand, they stare you down if you don't stand for the Canadian anthem.
You can go through a bunch of things. It's anthems. It's hand on hearts. It's military. It's respect for university. You ever heard an American talk about where they went to school?
Oh.
It is with such reverie. And then they want their kid to go to the same school. And they went to Southwest Louisiana State, and it's the best of this. You ever heard a Canadian say, I went to Wilfrid Laurier and it's the best and everyone has to go there?
Yeah.
People don't say that.
They don't.
Even though it's a great place to go.
I will say that we don't necessarily understand draping in the flag and it represents a military. There are some people in the United States who don't understand that the flag represents something totally different to an African American than it does to a Caucasian.
And to have a political...
And don't care.
And to have a political viewpoint, which, you know, freedom of speech is supposed to give you the rights to do that. So Colin Kaepernick had the rights to express himself in the way he chose to.
The GM of the Toronto Argonauts, Jim Popp, joins us next. This is Overdrive, TSN 1050, the TSN Go app. Jim Popp, the GM of the Toronto Argonauts, will join us in just a moment here. Overdrive, TSN 1050 and the TSN Go app. Scott MacArthur and Steve Simmons. We'll get Jim's thoughts on the big news of the day in the CFL, Steve, which is this bold move by the commissioner, Randy Ambrosi, to change a significant rule essentially a third of the way into the season. And that is that teams, coaches, will now have one challenge per game. They had a minimum of two with the possibility of three if you got your first two right under the previous rule.
So here's what makes it fascinating to me on a number of levels. But one, the final 3 minutes of a CFL game are almost an eternity unto themselves. I mean, you can get all kind with clock stop, you can get all kinds of stuff happening in those 3 minutes. Do you wait as a coach until those final 3 minutes wondering if something might happen that you've got to look at? Or do you wait until the second half if you have something in the first half you might? Like, when do you decide what's the moment that you're going to need to use the challenge? And how do you decide when that is? And these guys have been throwing, like, they've been throwing the flags. I mean,
it's an addiction.
Challenge happy. And they're not challenging, like, whether a guy is caught the ball or not. They're picking at the rules, which is why this, how this thing got off track. And, you know, I think I'm impressed with the fact that Randy Ambrosi has come in. I may not completely agree with what he's done or even the timing of what he's done, but I'm really impressed.
What's your big concern?
Well, I think that I'm a little bit on the Daron Carter side, that what happens if you have a challenge early, and then does that change the way your defense plays, for example, after that? Or does that put too much onus on the officiating? Well, obviously, you know, Randy says it's going to be up to the officials to do their parts. And I think some of this replay challenge has started because the officiating at times hasn't been to the level that it should be. And that's the difficulty of all sports today with instant replay, because you're seeing now flaws in officiating, frankly, we never saw before.
What do you believe about pass interference and where the official should err? Should he err to the side of interference when in doubt, or should he err to the side of let the two push and pull for the ball? Let them play. Because in the NFL, they definitely skew toward the penalty now, right? Because they're trying to encourage offense. So if you don't make the catch, you at the very least get the gain.
I don't like that view. I don't think you should have a set view going in. I think you have to look at each play individually. You have to look at who the players are. I'll take Michael Irvin as an example, going back as a frame of reference. When Michael Irvin played for the Dallas Cowboys, he loved to push off.
Mm-hmm.
And he got a lot of catches because he pushed off. If he was playing today, they'd be calling interference on him left, right, and center.
Do you think so?
Yeah.
Because
you can't...
You're trying to encourage offense, so...
I know that, but if you notice, guys aren't able to do the manhandle the defensive back thing the way Michael Irvin physically could overwhelm defensive backs. So there's been a little sort of pushback that way, but I think you can't say it. I've seen times where you see both guys fighting for the ball, both guys with their hands on each other, and then they throw a pass interference call. Well, to my mind, it's pass interference both ways. So you can't sit there and say, oh, let's give the offensive guy more room or the defensive guy more room. I think you have to look at each play individually, and this is where you have to trust your officials, and the director of officiating and the people in charge of officiating in the league have to set a mandate. This is what we want to see called. This is what we don't want to see called. And I think you have to do it that way. And I hated the idea of having replay with pass interference, even though the whole thing started because Montreal got ripped off in a playoff game, which I'm sure Jim Popp will remember.
Very well.
Against Hamilton, where Daron Carter got interfered with and should have scored a touchdown.
Yeah, the Argonauts are back in action tomorrow night, so it's Thursday night football on TSN. They get the Calgary Stampeders.
So, ouch.
Yeah. Coming off a 60-1 victory over the Hamilton Tiger Cats out west last week. So we'll get into that, and we'll get into today's big announcement, the rule change now with the GM of the Toronto Argonauts, Jim Popp, joins us. Thanks for taking some time, Jim. How are you today?
I'm doing good, gentlemen. How are you?
Doing excellent. So before we get into tomorrow night's game and look back on last week, just interested in your thoughts on the rule change today by the new commish, Randy Ambrosi. Each team will have one challenge per game.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's the same rule we've had. There's just been one eliminated, and, you know, I guess through all the discussions and that they just feel this is the best thing to move forward with, and, hey, look, we just follow the rules that we're given, and we'll make use of it.
Well, some of this started, Jim, if you go back a couple of years ago, to the game that you played when you were in Montreal playing Hamilton, and Jerron Carter got interfered with in that playoff game, and it wasn't called, and I think that's when replay for pass interference came into play, did it not?
Yes, that's exactly when it came into play, and you know, there was a big discussion about how we probably should implement the review system because of possibly making a big difference in a game, a win-loss situation or a team moving on in the playoffs, and I think the commissioner discussed that today, and that was really the whole view of putting the replay system in, and it's gone in so many different ways, and we've added so much technology. Every league or even college system does it differently, and we just, you know, you're always experimenting, trying to figure out what makes the game better, and if it's not working, then sometimes you got to tweak it.
Jim, it hasn't happened down in the NFL yet, but you're a good guy to ask because you've been on the sideline as a head coach as well. I mean, objectivity in the game is, did he fumble? Did he make the catch or not? Did the ball break the plane of the goal line for a touchdown or did it not? Subjectivity is challenging penalties, which essentially, or calls that were not made that you think are penalties, where you take the subjective decision one way or the other of the on-field official and then pass off to more subjectivity in the control room back in Toronto. What do you think generally of the notion of challenging penalties? Do you like that?
Well, I do. I mean, I think what we're all trying to do is get it right. And I think that officiating in any sport has got to be one of the most difficult jobs to do, and is going to be criticized no matter what, just especially with a replay or TV replay, even if you don't have a challenge system. People are always going to question and stuff, especially when it's slowed down and, you know, frame by frame, and did something happen? So, we've had two challenge system in for a long time now, and we've had no more challenges than that unless you got two correct. We did implement last year halfway through the season that a timeout was tied to it, and we took the free challenge out, and it made a big difference. It sped the game up. There's been less challenges, so there still seems to be a concern about too many people complaining about it, that eliminating a challenge obviously will be less reviews, or you're subject to use it, only if needed. But, it all comes down to, getting calls properly, made, and it's not always going to be correct. Even when you're in the review system, it's a human deciding if it's overturned or not. And there's always going to be subject to controversy there. And so it's just part of sports, with the replay system in this day and time.
How many commissioners now for you, Jim? How many have you outlived?
I don't know. That's a tough job, man. I tell you what, that's a really tough job, and it's a situation where they do the best they can. There's a lot of bosses, and they got to get in there and please a lot of people, and but I think a lot of them have done a great job, and just one of these situations where I wish our commission the best, that we all try to flourish from it, and we give a great product for our fans and the people that support the Canadian Football League.
Well, the reason I asked that question at the beginning is I've been around the league an awfully long time, and I've seen very few times where during a season a major rule change has been implemented in a league sometimes that couldn't agree what day of the week it was, let alone for anything else. Are you surprised that he's been able to come in 5 weeks or whatever it's been and deal with some very difficult things right off the pack and then make a significant change like this one?
Well, again, it's not the easiest job to have. I mean, that's the first thing. And, so I think he's done a great job. I think he's done a great job getting out there in the public and seeing everybody and trying to make everything work. Listen to everyone. I think he's done a lot of the listening to people in order to get where we are today. And this is one of the quick moves that were made in order to try to clean things up that
will be appealing to people.
With Argos GM Jim Popp on Overdrive, TSN 1050 and the TSN Go app. So Calgary is in tomorrow night, Jim, at BMO Field. 60-1 winners over Hamilton last week. I mean, that's a score of one game, but it certainly stands out. This is one of the elite teams in the CFL. Do you look at this as kind of a litmus test as you guys approach the, I guess, third way mark, close to the halfway point of the regular season?
Yeah, I think we, you know, every week we're measuring ourselves and what we can do better and how can we compete with people. And obviously Calgary's been probably over the last, you know, 5 years or so considered the model team that has done the best. So obviously, yeah, I mean, you're still measuring your stuff. You're still trying to, find, you know, how good you are, how good you can be. And, and where are we right now? So I think up to this point, we feel like we can compete with anybody and have a chance to beat anybody. And, you know, we've proven that, you know, playing the defending Grey Cup champions. But, you know, they haven't had their greatest season either. But, you know, there's a fine line between winning. There's a fine line in playing your best game from week to week. And, we haven't played our best on some of these games. And we're 3-3. And Calgary's done a better job than most teams this season. That's why they have the record they do. And they had a lot go right for them last week. But you got to give them credit.
Thanks for this, Jim. Best of luck tomorrow night. We'll be watching, and we'll catch up again next week.
I appreciate it. You guys have a great night.
You bet. Jim Popp, the general manager of the Toronto Argonauts.
He has one thing in common today with Ricky Ray tomorrow. He's going to have to find a way to avoid traffic. There's honking going on there. Yeah. There's steins going on there. There's buzzing happening.
I think I heard a car door open or shut, too, so he must have been...
And I also think his cell phone rang because somebody was trying to make a deal or something at that point. And usually general managers will say, wait a minute, I got a call here. I'm going to take this. See you later, guys.
The best are the
ones. I've had that before happen, where you're talking to a guy and all of a sudden his phone rings and it's somebody needs to talk to. And it's like...
Radio interview or just a one-on-one chat?
Being on the phone, you know, chatting, talking.
Those are two different things, right? If you're not right up against deadline, you can get back to him in 15 minutes. If you're on a radio interview, it's
a little different. I think we had one with Alex Anthopoulos on this station where he came on and maybe was on a minute and a call came in. It was like, gotta go, see ya. And that was the end of it.
Did he make a big trade like 15 minutes later?
I think he ordered lunch.
Exactly. What's that? Static? I can't... questions are getting too tough.
It's funny because sometimes you're actually on the phone, not necessarily doing an interview or whatever, with somebody, and all of a sudden you get pulled into the drive-through lineup, and you're like, hang on a second, I got to order. You put your phone down. I'll have two burgers and...
Yeah.
Yeah. Hang on. What do you want?
Or the best is when the interview subject gets pulled over by the police on the side of the road. That's happened a few times.
Pinball Clements.
Of all people.
Yeah, of all people. Like the world's most honest man. He got pulled over, I think, for talking on his cell phone.
This was a blast, pal.
It was fun. I enjoyed it.
Right out of time. Overdrive back at 4 o'clock tomorrow. Naylor and Landsberg, 6 a.m. tomorrow. Stay with us. TSN 1050.